Blog Talk Radio.
This is Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, it's, let's see, I'm in New York City. The sun is out. The weather is really nice and a nice temperature, I guess, for the fall. As a matter of fact, I would probably, I'm not even sure I'd even put on a jacket. Or even long sleeves, maybe long sleeves, I don't know. But anyway, I'm inside, so what can I tell you? Soon after the radio show, I think I'll duck out for a little while to get some of this fresh, crisp air. But meanwhile, we are going to go back to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, because there's something brewing up there. Yeah. Brennan Rumble will talk with us about the Portsmouth Brewing Company, which is the oldest craft brewery in New Hampshire, or as they call it, I guess in England, Hampshire. Well, also, where's the best place to get information about the Portsmouth area? The Chamber of Commerce. Well, Valerie Rochon, or Rochon, I'll find out when she calls in, will share much of the information on what you can get from the chamber versus other, like, tourism offices there. Like, what's the difference with, you know, when you go on to the different websites to get information. And then, back to food again, as we talk with Scott Logan, who's the co-owner. His wife is the other owner of Blue Mermaid Grill, and it's Caribbean inspired cuisine. Yes, I mean, first, I know the fairy tale brownies. Okay, there we go. Okay, it's my spot.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these fabulous brownies at www.brownies.com. I'm coming up with all kinds of little recipes with the brownies. For instance, I think I had the Peanut Principal Company on my radio show. And so that's a great, they have some great peanut butters that are very healthy. Not that the brownies are not healthy. I mean, comparatively speaking, in terms of what's in them, they are healthier than most brownies. But anyway, so that's one. But now what I think we're going to talk about, beer here, get your beer here. Do we getting our beer here, Brennan?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Wow.
How are you today?
Oh, just fine. I wish I had a... You know what it is about beer? I'm not a beer drinker, But when it's like in the summertime when I want something, I find it thirst quenching as something, you know, to drink. That's what how I find it. The problem,
there's all different kinds of beers.
The problem is that when I'm drinking beer to quench my thirst, you could just be giving me a glass of water or a glass of milk, and I'll drink it the same way.
That can be dangerous.
I forget there's alcohol in it.
Yeah,
you know, so I'm dealing with it as something that I'm thirsty. Anyway.
Well, that's something that honestly touches on one of the aspects of serving all these great beers here at the Portsmouth Brewery responsibly. We certainly train our staff to let customers know that not only is there alcohol in our beer, sometimes there's more alcohol than they might think, and to enjoy it, you know, at a certain pace, to really savor it, you know. Yeah, because, it can get pretty interesting pretty quick if you're drinking it like water.
So let me first ask you, in terms of the area, Portsmouth area, the Seacoast area, are they big on breweries, or like this is just yours is like the one of a kind in the whole area?
No, it's interesting. There are a lot of new breweries opening, breweries of all sizes and shapes, in the Seacoast, New Hampshire area in the last few years. But, you know, Portsmouth, New Hampshire in particular has a real big reputation for brewing going back, you know, before Prohibition. As I understand it, Portsmouth was one of the leading brewing cities in the country. But Prohibition kind of wiped all that out, and it took close to 75 years before brewing made its way back to New Hampshire, and we were, you know, for the first brew pub to open after Prohibition. So, and that was even still 22 and a half years ago. But, of late, it seems like Portsmouth's kind of recapturing some of its brewing swagger, you know. The Smutty Nose Brewery, obviously Red Hook, has been around along with Smutty Nose for quite a while now. But down in Hampton, there's the Throwback Brewery. We've got Earth Eagle, kind of a nano brewery here in town, a very small brewery with a tasting room. And there's brew pubs opening up in Dover. A new brew pub called Seventh Settlement is due to open shortly. Then there's over in Kittery, Maine, just across the bridge, our former head brewer, Todd Mott, is looking to open up another kind of nano brewery or just tasting brewery. And then even up in York, Maine, one town up from Kittery, my hometown, there's some folks looking to open up another one of those, just kind of, like I said, nano brewery is just, you know, a place that brews just a couple of barrels of beer a week, and primarily just for the purpose of having people come and tasted in their tasting room in smaller portions, or also to maybe sell to some of the local restaurants and all that, but pretty small scale stuff. But so there's just all kinds of brewing happenings around the region, and it's kind of exciting.
So there's, in other words, we have the whole quite a difference between, like, yours is a brew pub.
Mm-hmm.
Where you go in and not only, you know, it's you're eating and also and you could see where they're doing the brewing. You could, like,
yes.
You could
typically
do that.
Typically, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
Get tours, by the way? Or?
Yeah, we do. We
okay.
We offer tours, Thursday through Sunday at 3:00.
Okay, so as opposed to when you say there's like a mini breweries, you're talking about just a place like. Like in other words, like they're just setting up. You're not coming there. There's no food. They're basically coming in if there's a tour, not necessarily a tour, but they're setting it up so they're housing what they need to make to brew beers, and then from there they're going to, you know, send them out, bottle them, or whatever they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely different type of thing.
Yeah, two different things. Like a brew pub, like you said, is is a restaurant with a brew house attached to it, really. And then there's their just craft or their production breweries, and just all they do is make beer and distribute it in some way, shape, or form. And then you have these other kind of these other small, you know, very small breweries called nano breweries that are a little of both. I mean, they serve beer on the premises like a brew pub, but they don't have food, kind of like a production brewery. So they're just you know, usually owner-operated, smaller places. Maybe they have two guys making beer and maybe someone who helps, you know, work the taps. And people just come in for a few tastings and maybe take home a growler of beer, you know, like a half-gallon jug of beer. And that's all they do. And then they go somewhere else, you know, to have food or go home to have food kind of thing.
You know, I just, like, remembered about this one particular, and this was an interesting one. It's just, I went to a place that they don't make a, it's basically it's a steakhouse, but they mm-hmm. have a tremendous amount of beer, both mm-hmm. on tap and in bottles. And you can actually, the ones on tap, you could bring in a gallon jug. Well, I mm-hmm. guess they start you off, they give you one. And you
yes.
can take it home of things that are on tap.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, some that have their name. The one that I particularly remember, I had gotten this beer called, have you ever heard of something called Quack?
No, I haven't.
It's a Belgian, not Q-U-A-C-K, I guess it's K-W-A-K. It's this Belgian beer, and it happens when they serve it, it's this particular kind of glass that sort of has a bulb at the bottom. There's this whole thing with this.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, so I thought it
like
was...
Like a yard of, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so it was like, it was that kind of a thing that they did, but not a brewery. In other words, you know what I'm
yeah.
saying? That's
mm-hmm.
So that's another whole angle when it comes to places with that serve beer, that
mm-hmm.
they're not brewing anything there, but they're providing a large amount of both what's on tap and what's in the bottles. Now,
yeah.
your place, from what I'm getting, you walk in, you look at the chalkboard, and you see what
mm-hmm.
beer is available. You can't go in and say, I'm going to have a Blue Moon.
Yeah. Exactly.
You could say, I drink Blue Moon. What do you have that's similar?
Yeah, that's one of the services our staff provides, is trying to get people to select a beer that is similar probably to what they've experienced outside the brewery. But having said that, we in recent years have added a pretty good selection of beers made elsewhere to our lineup, either on draft or in the bottle. We have what we call a collection of beers named the Brewer's Cellar. You know, they're kind of hand-picked beers from other parts of the country and the world that our brewer, you know, wants to kind of complement the draft selection of beers that he makes, and then other draft beers, can be made elsewhere too. Smutty Nose Brewing, our sister company, always has at least a couple or three styles on tap here, and then we even have in our downstairs lounge an additional four tap system, specifically for those exotic kind of boutique-y rare beers that are offered on tap, that I think really just strengthens, you know, our, I guess, what we offer here. It strengthens the appeal of the brewery and as a whole to people, because let's face it, you even just mentioned some of these other places are popping up that don't make beer, but they sure have a wonderful craft beer selection, and that's the draw, you know, and they do quite well. We were very in tune with that, and thought, you know what? While we always will have our niche of our own handcrafted beers, which is fantastic, and that will always be the heart and soul of the place. We thought it smart to also tap into some of the great beers made elsewhere, just so that our customers can have a chance to enjoy great beer here and from everywhere else too, just like they can from at some of these other places. So so it's worked out really well.
So, for instance, and I'm just like, you know, because I was thinking of like with Quack. So let's just say you were able to get it, you got this, and you tasted it, you said, well, let's see if we can make something similar. Can you do that?
Sure. Sure, we do that a lot. In fact, there, that's what a lot of brewing is kind of taking, and just like in cooking and other, you know, well, mostly in cooking, I guess, where you can take a recipe of a staple item or an item that you like, you know, and put your own spin on it. We do that all the time here, and everybody does that. You know, there are very few styles of beer that are being created these days. There's most of the beer being brewed is brewed true to a certain style, but with you know, a kind of an entrepreneurial spin to it, you know, and that's fine. That results in all kinds of exciting, different variations on major themes for people to enjoy, you know, and everybody in the brewing industry is really open about sharing ideas, you know, and collaborating on certain types of brews and, you know, just all with the idea of making more and more great beer. So that's a good point.
Well, what I would like to then also go into, just for people who don't know, I mean, like, you know, when you're dealing with wine, it's basically you're just dealing with grapes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's one ingredient,
I mean,
one basic ingredient, that's it. When you're dealing with beer, you're dealing with hops, barley, wheat, I guess. Or,
yeah.
Now barley is the sugar from. No.
Yeah, barley is a type of grain. So you have to have some sort of starch source for making beer, and you know, predominantly now it comes from grains. You know, you can have wheat, you know, rice, rye, like you said, barley. You know, you can have all different kinds of grains. You know, they make gluten-free beer with sorghum now and so on. But you have to have some source of fermentable sugars. And,
right.
Again, that's typically what you get, you know, what grains use for, as well as, you know, adding certain other characteristics to the beer. Certainly some flavor and color. So we call it, you know, either malt or barley or grain or whatever you want to call it, is one of the four main ingredients, along with the water and the yeast and the hops.
Now, what exactly are hops?
Hops are a flower, really. They're a viney flower that has resins in it that bring flavor and aroma to beer, depending on how it's used and how much is used. You know, they balance out some of the characters. Like you mentioned wine, you know, some people compare hops in beer to kind of like the tannins in wine, you know, just astringency, if you will, and certainly in hops, you know, there's all kinds of flavors. You can get musky, earthy, citrusy, tropical, grassy, piney. You know, there's just a wonderful array of flavors you can get from hops, and the same thing, you know, as far as aromas go. And but that's it. They're flower. They grow on vines. They're typically, when they're farmed, they grow on these giant trellises, kind of similar in height to like a typical telephone pole, you know, 30 feet or so in the air. And they're spaced out in a way, too, just and so high because they need it to have plenty of ventilation to avoid molding. They're very susceptible to molding, from what I understand. But in general, they can even grow in the wild. Like around New England here, it's not uncommon to find a hop vine just snaking its way up a stop sign or something.
Really? Like if I saw a photo of it, would I then like as I'm driving around going, oh wait, stop there. There's some hops
yeah.
growing. Let's get a photo.
Yeah, you might have to look a little hard.
As opposed to a cornfield.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
Look, there's
exactly.
a cornfield, you know. But, oh, look, hops are growing here. Come on, let's get a photo.
Yeah. I tell you, I mean, they're just, it's funny. As much as they're susceptible to the mold and maybe disease late in the year, right when they're about to be harvested, you know, is it's crucial that they don't, you know, that's when they're most susceptible to those diseases and mold, from what I understand. But these things are like, they're kind of like weeds in a way. They'll grow almost anywhere. So you can find them from time to time. At this point, people, we even sell hops, hop rhizomes in our retail store every spring. Yeah. So, you know, just little shards of hop roots from hop vines that you can plant and grow hops, you know. So a lot of folks, a lot of home brewers will grow hops at home, and then, you know, then things just spread from there, too.
Would you use hops for anything else?
You can use hops. I know there are hops.
People make tea from hops?
Yeah, you can make, in fact, you know, before beer is actually introduced, what they call the wort, basically the sugar water, from cooking with grain and rinsing the grain and then throwing hops in, you know, before it meets the yeast molecules or whatever, the organisms, it's just basically a tea, you know, is a way of thinking of it. But yeah, you can, hops I know are part of my everyday organic vitamins and mineral pills. You know, if you look on some of the jars of some of these homeopathic or organic vitamins, and you'll see in the ingredients list, you'll see hops. Also, hops are part. They're also used in other kinds of medicinal products. You know, that are aimed at relaxing you or helping you sleep, because hops have that character too, kind of like lavender, where, and they even, I guess, in you know, olden times, they would stuff pillows with hop flowers and other herbs, so that it just helped relax you as you put your head on the pillow and try to go to sleep. And we sell hops in soaps, you know, and hops in shampoos
store that sells these things?
Mm-hmm. And they're available online. They're pretty common at this point.
We'll have to talk after the show.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I would love to get samples of these things and write about this. Because
yeah,
I think it's
absolutely
interesting. You know, I love when I find interesting products. That's me.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I've learned a lot working here as we just continue to source out some of these products. You know, I never would have thought you could find hops or beer, you know, used in some of these things. We sell, for instance, beer brittle, you know, so they actually use beer to make this really spicy caramel-like, you know, nut brittle, and it's delicious. And,
wow.
We use beer in cooking, you know, about 80% of our menu is...
Yes, I was commenting
features.
On
yeah.
that in my article about expect, you know, to find... beer used for in a lot of the ingredients on the menu.
Yeah, it's great. It's good stuff. So very versatile product, very versatile ingredients.
Now, I'm curious, when you're cooking with beer, I mean, you have to, I guess you have, you know, your chef who has to, get together with the guy who's the brewmaster, and decide on what kind of beer to use for what kind of cooking. I mean, you can't just, you know, that kind of a thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And usually the beers we use in cooking are maltier beers. Sometimes when you use a really hoppy beer, you don't get a real desirable effect on the food. You know, the maltier beers are going to be sweeter beers and have a lot of flavors that go well in sauces and complement, you know, a lot of main dishes. But yeah, they do get together pretty frequently and talk about how to kind of synchronize what they're doing and put out, you know, not only food cooked with beer, but sometimes the brewer will actually make a beer that fits, you know, that pairs well with a food that the chef has come up with. So very
symbiotic
relationship.
Do you ever do a food tasting thing with beer?
Yeah, absolutely. We do usually in the off season when we're slow enough to kind of devote the time and energy to doing these things. We'll do what we call beer socials. They're just 2-hour gatherings in our lounge, and mostly, you know, aimed at just kind of bringing people together, having people standing up and mingling and chatting. But scattered about the room will be pairing stations where we'll be featuring a particular food item and a particular beer, and so that the customers just at their own pace make their way around and grab a nibble and take a sip and, you know, enjoy the flavors that they experience within those pairings. So that's a lot of fun. We'll also do a little bit more formal events like beer dinners, you know, sit down events,
right,
that are multiple coursed events, you know, that feature beer and food paired together. We do a lot of events off site too, that are also, you know, the themed events based on beer and food being enjoyed together. That whole notion of beer going with food and vice versa has really, really come a long way. I think, you know, a lot of folks are very familiar with the notion of pairing a certain wine with a certain beer or food.
Yeah.
And there's no question wine goes wonderfully with lots of foods. But more and more people are being turned on to the beer and food, you know, pairing phenomenon.
What I want to do is now get into your menu, and not necessarily the kind of thing like, you know, the burger kind of thing, but the things that you have that are unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I know you and I were talking recently about this notion of being a gastropub or that type of phenomenon, and you know, I just thought I'd start out by saying, you know, I looked it up, and from what I read, the term kind of lends itself to describing, it was worded as more of a higher end or fancy restaurant with expensive foods and all that. But we're not that, and we'll never be that. But that doesn't mean we can't be interesting and unique and diverse in what we offer, and I think we've achieved that goal. So, anything you want to ask, I'm ready to answer here.
So let's talk about some. Now, I had the, for instance, I had the duck.
Mm-hmm.
Duck
Brewhouse duck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny. We've already taken that off the menu.
Oh, no.
We've replaced it. With some great food specials, but that was a successful item. We just thought it had kind of run its course on the menu, and we've replaced it with a lamb dish, which we're featuring today, which is delicious, called lamb tagine, and the lamb tagine refers literally to a cooking device found in cooking Moroccan foods, especially where it's like a, it looks almost like it looks like a genie bottle, really, like I Dream a Genie, with a big thick rounded bottom and then a very tall chimney, if you will, and the reason And so you cook your meats in these tagines, and as the smoke and so on, the moves up the chimney, it cools off and condenses, and then all those flavors and all that moisture just drips back down, you know, and it really results in a nice, warm, moist, tender kind of stew, really. It's got cinnamon and allspice and paprika in it, and really delicious. And it does have some beer. We put a nice brown ale in there, and it's really taken off already. So that's like you're kind of getting at. That's not something you'd probably walk in the Portsmouth Brewery expecting to see on the menu, you know. But along those lines, though, just to adhere to one of our basic missions, which is, you know, we serve all types, or, we're kind of a yes place is how we think of ourselves, and we try to make everybody happy, and so we certainly do have some of those items you might expect, you know, if you're going into a pub, like nachos and bean dip and chicken tenders and those kinds of things. You know, great, we got probably the best burger in town, and we've got some ribs and all that. So we try to do it all.
Mm-hmm. The other comment that I want to make so people will know this is where you're getting some of the things you're using. I believe you're getting it from Strawberry Bank.
We are, yeah. It's funny, for cooking and brewing. But Strawberry Bank, the local historic village, if you will, has a working garden, and the gentleman John Forte, who oversees the gardening and the collaborations with other chefs and brewers in the area, does a great job, and he's brought over spices and herbs for us to cook and brew with. We've been making a certain style of beer recently with his products called Gruets, G-R-U-E-T, and Gruet is a beer that's flavored with herbs and spices, kind of almost in place of hops. This style of beer, you know, was first brewed in areas where there just weren't hops, so they'd go foraging for other things that they like the flavor of, and they threw it in beer, you know. So we've got all kinds of spices and herbs in some of these beers we're making, and then we also mix it into some of the food we make too.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that was the one. I think I had Summer Flower Gruet was the
mm-hmm.
one, and I thought that what was surprising for me was that after tasting it, I went, all right, I can have this instead of Blue Moon.
Yeah.
It was really very, very flavorful to have the flowers, you know, in these beers, and I tried not to drink it down. I mean, oh, do you want a pint? Oh, no, let's just go for a glass.
Yeah, yeah.
It's lunchtime. I don't think I'd bet. But
that's
that
really
would have been easily something I would have just, like, you know, poured down mm-hmm. my throat out of thirst
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
taste, you know.
I wanted
people to know what also made your brewery, the brewery, different
yeah.
in terms of, you know, that you're using, I guess, local stuff. You couldn't get more local.
Couldn't be much more local than that. We had passion flower in that with lavender, bergamot, marjoram, hyssop, mugwort. Let me see what else. I can't remember. We use fresh rose hips, some coriander. You know, those are things you'd think you'd find in something you eat off a plate, you know, rather than drinking a glass.
But it
was really something else. Yeah, it was delicious.
But unfortunately, this is not something I can order online, huh?
No, unfortunately not. I wish. We are not licensed to distribute our beer. You can get a license in New Hampshire that allows you to self-distribute as a brew pub. Brew pubs are classified
right.
in a specific genre and have certain laws that apply to them and no other type of brewing operation. And we, for quite honestly, as much as we like to entertain the idea of distributing our beer, even if it were just locally, just we can't give it much serious thought. We're challenged to keep up with meeting the demand of our customers here, you know, at the brewery itself. So, but some folks, you know, there's one brewery in particular I'm thinking of right now, Moat Mountain Brewery and Smokehouse. They're a brewery up in North Conway, New Hampshire. Yeah, they have a brewer who, you know, gets in his car and takes his beer all over the place, and it's good stuff. We've carried some of their beer down here.
Okay. Well, first of all, I need, what's your website so that people can?
Sure. It's PortsmouthBrewery.com.
Oh, Portsmouth. Easy enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to just, I thought maybe, would you like to say hello to Valerie?
Sure.
From the Chamber of Commerce. She's on right now.
Oh, great. Hi, Valerie.
Hey, Brennan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? This is
great. Thank you.
Good to be teaming up with you.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I always love hearing about how you're using local ingredients.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's so cool.
Our customers are so curious these days, you know, and willing to try stuff like that. And you know, we all know how important it is to try to source our food locally. And we thought, well, what the heck? Let's make this beer as local as it can get. And like I said, people were really curious and interested to try it. And so we'll just keep on doing it as long as people want us to.
Okay.
Excellent.
Well, Brennan, I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
And
Valerie, okay.
Continue talking, schmoozing about Portsmouth.
Well, thanks, Merle. I appreciate
it. I'm gonna call you afterwards because I have a moneymaker thing for you.
Okay.
To tell you about. Yeah.
Well, operators will be standing by.
Now, just so I know the. And I'm not going to give it out. The phone number you're calling in on, is I can call you back on that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay,
yep,
I'll do that right after the show is over.
Well, thanks, Merle. Thanks so much for the opportunity to talk with you.
You're very welcome. And I'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. I think that's so cool to be able to, isn't it, that the... You know, that the brewery, I guess it's as if you're thinking, like, let's say if you're out on Long Island and you're using, I guess, the grapes from a winery that's across the street for something kind of thing, right?
Well, I think that the whole local movement is not only in the Portsmouth area, and we try to do it really well because we're lucky enough to have a lot of farms and vineyards and breweries, mini breweries, micro breweries in this area. It's also obviously a movement that's across the country, and we're seeing some changes in how people want to eat, the type of they want to. You know, everybody's trying to reduce their carbon footprint, and so. The fact that we're able to do that so easily and so well in Portsmouth, I think the brewery certainly takes advantage of that. There are a number of other restaurants in the city that do that. The brewery, in addition to having this local movement for both their beverages and their food, it's just plain a fun place. It's just fun.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. But I noticed in traveling around the country, which is a great thing, that wineries are popping up. No matter what state you're going in, you know, and breweries and things like that. And what happens is there's less imported things that you need.
Yes.
That you can, you know, the United States has good stuff.
Yes. Yes. you can economically look for that as good news, bad news, but I think locally we see that as really good news. That we're taking advantage of our local farms and the local resources that we have here. So
yeah,
works for everybody.
Okay, so let's say, you know, I didn't catch, where is the Chamber of Commerce, by the way? I mean, I know, of course, Give me an idea. I could have passed
the chamber. The Chamber of Commerce and the Visitor Center, and the reason why you didn't pass it, Merle, when you were visiting with us is because you came up the beach road and you went directly out to Newcastle as opposed to coming up the highway. When people come up I-9 Interstate 95,
right.
We are exit 7 off of I-95, the last exit in New Hampshire, because Maine is right across the river, as we know. And
right.
If you come off the highway, we are within a half a mile on the right-hand side. The visitor center is
okay.
Right here,
so,
right as you're coming into the city.
Oh, okay. So while going around like the downtown area, I wouldn't have come across it then.
If you're walking around downtown during summer season, you would have seen the Market Square kiosk, which is a small 8-sided kiosk that has a lot of the brochures and the information on many of the
right.
things to see and do and experience in town. That's operated by the chamber as well. So that's our satellite spot where we're right in the middle of the thick of things in Market Square. As you saw, Market Square is the happening place. And so the Market Square kiosk is our information outlet
okay.
right there in the downtown.
Okay, so there, when people, like, you know, there's different kind of, like, tourism things. There's a Chamber of Commerce, there's another, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. There's many, many opportunities to collect information on what there is happening in and around Portsmouth and the Seacoast area. So if you come off the highway and you stop at our visitor center, we'll give you maps, we'll give you a guide, we'll give you brochures on shopping or dining or attractions or cruises or whatever it is that you want. And then we send you off and head you into the downtown or around the Seacoast. Once you're downtown, so I have a question. I've picked up all this information from the visitor center. Can you point me, here I am standing here in Market Square, can you point me towards this particular restaurant or Strawberry Bank Museum? I see it on the map, but can you help me get there? There's also the opportunity to visit the Discover Portsmouth Center, which is our arts, culture, and history center. We have so much history here in Portsmouth, and people don't realize how much we have. And they start walking around, they look at the architecture, they look at the age of the buildings, and they think, oh, well, there must have been something going on here. So there's things like, you know, Paul Revere rode through Portsmouth months before he rode to Lexington and Concord, saying the British are coming. So there's interesting historical facts, and the Discover Portsmouth Center really provides a lot of that information. So the Discover Portsmouth Center also has a lot of the guides and the maps that we have. So we work together trying to make sure that everybody has access to as much information so that they can experience as much and as varied an experience as they'd like to have while they're on the seacoast.
But if,
so, yeah,
you know,
there's lots of ways to get stuff.
Yeah. Well, if I'm going to the Chamber of Commerce, would that be the place where I say, you know, I was on my way to blah, 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 and I thought I really want to stay in Portsmouth for a couple of days. Can you give me information on the hotels, you know, things like that?
Absolutely.
Can you call it and see, call the hotel and see if they have a room? I mean, do you go, you know, doing that as well, or?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a number of our properties who call us or stop by, have somebody stop by and say, hey, listen, tonight we're giving a special if somebody comes into the chamber. I saw one of our properties do that yesterday. I happened to be down in the visitor center, and somebody came in and wanted to stay at a particular property, the Port Inn, and they offered yesterday, just for chamber people who stopped into the visitor center, a $79 rate, which at this time of the year, during foliage season, is a darn good rate.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
They often do that. They often do that. So we have about 45 properties that we work with, both downtown and surrounding the downtown, and they often provide special deals, you know, last-minute deals or coming up for this weekend deals if you stop into the visitor center. Sure, yeah. We do a lot of that.
The same thing with restaurants, too? Does the same thing happen with restaurants as well?
No, the restaurants, not so much. We do have, what we do have, which is pretty exciting, particularly during the summer season, from Columbus, from Memorial Day to Columbus Day, the retailers and the restaurants work together so that the retailers in the downtown have something called Shop Portsmouth Friday Nights. And if you purchase anything at a dozen or so retail shops on Friday, the shop will stamp your receipt with a Shop Portsmouth stamp. And if you bring that receipt with the Shop Portsmouth stamp on it into about a dozen or so local restaurants, they will give you on that night a deal. There's some restaurants that give you 10% off. There's some, one of our little ice cream shops gives you free jimmies. There's another fabulous restaurant that gives you a free glass of champagne. So they all do something different, but they all do something very special. And in this way, we get both the restaurants and the shops, because who doesn't want to come into Portsmouth and eat and stroll around and shop, or shop and then get something to eat? So in this way, we just cater to that symbiotic relationship between the shops and the restaurants. So in that way, yes, we do have specials.
Now, do you only... Because I sometimes I come across this in the travels. Let's say I'm just saying, like Port Inn, are they registered with the Chamber of Commerce? Do they have to? I don't mean registered. Are they a member?
They are.
Okay.
Yeah. There's only one or two hotels in this general seacoast area that are not members of the Chamber. So, and we do call arounds, you know, like today is Thursday. We'll start calling around today to the hotels for the weekend to learn what their availability is so that when we have folks coming in, we don't have to send them all over town. And very soon, before the holidays, before the Christmas holidays, we will have launched our brand new tourism website where people can actually look at the inventory available and book right there online. So if somebody comes into the visitor center and they're looking for a hotel, without us calling around, the hotels will have uploaded the inventory and we can right there in front of you, look at our computer, look at the inventory, book a room for you, and voila, you're done.
That's great.
You're done. You're all set. So, yeah, we don't have to have people running around all over town. We'll try this place. We'll try that place. Right now we do it by phone. Very soon we'll be doing it online.
Now, would you consider like this certain, if you want to call it neighborhoods, to go to when you're going visiting Portsmouth?
That's an interesting question, Merle. There are some very different and distinct areas of Portsmouth, as you saw. There's near us, near the visitor center, right across the street, of course, is the working port. Now, Portsmouth has been a working port since the middle 1700s. So that we have, we still have the salt piles that come in from South America, and we have trucks that come from all over the northern New England area bringing their salt trucks so that they pick up salt, and then when the roads are snowy or icy, that's the salt that goes, that they distribute on the roads. And those salt piles are right here, which is, it's just very cool because people drive by and say, well, what is that? So it makes us a little unique and a little different. So that's one area where we sort of have that commercial port area. Then there's the Market Square downtown area, which we might consider another district or neighborhood, which is mostly shops and restaurants and that all the happenings. And that sort of trickles down to the waterfront area, which is all along the river, the Piscataquis River. And that we have, particularly during the summertime, we have a lot of decks and docks along the waterfront where people can eat and drink and be merry and have a great old time and watch a sunset, actually, because most of those restaurants and nightclubs face upriver to the west where the sun is setting, and it's absolutely gorgeous. So you have sort of that fun party, vibrant area. If you can continue further east on the river walking, then you'll get into more of a historical area, which encompasses Strawberry Bank Museum, Prescott Park along the river, the Gundalo cruise ship, sailing ship, and the South End, which is very old houses that were built back in the 1700s for fishing captains, for those, you know, those in the fishing industry who were in and out of Portsmouth all the time. So yeah, there's some very, very distinct neighborhoods. That's an interesting aspect that you picked up during your visit, didn't you?
Oh yeah. By the way, just so people can catch it, tell my listeners what a gundalo is.
A gundalo is the recreation of a barge that used to ply the waters around from the ocean through Portsmouth up into Great Bay in Little Bay. It's a flat-bottom gundalo barge that has a sail, a mast, that folds down. The sail actually folds down to get under the bridges to get up into Great Bay and Little Bay. And right now, it's this particular gundalo. It's called the Piscataqua for obvious reasons. It's an educational sailing ship. Public sails from Wednesday through Sunday. A lot of the school trips come along, so it's not just a sail. You can, if you wish, you can help to sail it. But it also does a lot of, it's a floating classroom. So you can, they help you to dip equipment into the ocean, and you pull it up, and you can see some living organisms, and it's just great fun, whether you're an adult or a child. And then in the evenings, they have these fabulous evening sails that are sunset sails, or sometimes they have sort of a cheese and wine and entertainment, maybe a duo or a trio, playing music on the gundalo. And it goes up and down from Portsmouth Harbor out to Great Bay. And it's just, it was hand-built exactly the way they were built back in the 1700s, and it was hand-built two summers ago on the grounds of the Strawberry Bank Museum. And so you could go by and you could help, you could watch, and it is exactly to scale and true to the 1700s, except for two things. One, it had to have a couple of minor adjustments according to the Coast Guard to make it seaworthy, according to be certified by the Coast Guard. And it does actually have a head on it, which the original barges did not have. Those are the only distinctions.
And by the way, for people who don't know what a head is, it's a bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
I didn't know if I could actually say that, Merle.
It's internet radio. You could say whatever you want.
I can say whatever I want. Well,
said,
all right. Thank you for saying it for me.
We could have actually said toilet.
Good to know.
But now, and just to get it clear, if you take the harbor cruise, are you going, I mean, except for the ones where you're going to, you know, the special islands or whatever, are you basically doing the same, it's still touring the same area?
The quick answer to that is yes. We have different cruise lines or cruise ships, call them, and I don't want to give the impression that we have these massive 2,500-person cruise ships.
Right.
The gundalo can hold, I think it's between 30 and 40 people. I think 40 is the max. They like to keep it around 32 people on board. So it's not a great big cruise ship. It's a working sailing vessel.
Right.
We also have Portsmouth Harbor Cruises, which also has a small amount of people. It has around 50 people that can go on the Portsmouth Harbor Cruise ship. And that will go either, depending on the weather and the time of the year, will either go out into Great Bay or Little Bay, out into Portsmouth Harbor, or all the way out to the Isles of Shoals, which is an archipelago that's about 7 miles offshore. And some of those islands are in Maine, and some of them are in New Hampshire. There's sort of a cluster that's right offshore here. So Portsmouth Harbor Cruises will do that. The third cruise opportunity that we have is the Isles of Shoals Steamship Company. Now, that boat can fit around 200 people. And they go, again, both up to Great Bay, depending on the season. That's usually at this time of the year when it's a little chilly to go out to the Isles of Shoals. So they go up into Great Bay for the foliage, because the foliage Circling Great Bay is amazing this time of year. So everybody, so all the cruises go that way. But during the summertime, the Isles of Shoals goes out. The Isles of Shoals Steamship Company goes out to the Isles of Shoals. You can either cruise out and just circle round the Isles of Shoals, or you can get off and do a day trip. You can, where you can still let you off at about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning, and they'll come back and pick you up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So you can spend the day out on the island. Now, the island itself, Star Island, takes about an hour to circumnavigate. And there's an incubator colony for terns and seagulls. And there's the Oceanic Hotel, and you can hang out on the, oh, I don't even know how wide it is, maybe 30-foot-wide porch that covers three sides of the Oceanic Hotel. And they have little white, well, not little, good-sized white rocking chairs all along that porch, and you can rock and enjoy their hospitality and read a book, have some of their signature beverages, and simply look out over the world until the Isles of Shoals Steamship Company ship comes back to get you. So there's three different experiences, three very different river and ocean experiences that you can have while you're in Portsmouth.
Okay. Just to let people know that in terms of the barge, I'm guessing that's the one that in terms of that, there's no, you can go indoors.
On the barge, you cannot go indoors. Portsmouth Harbor Cruises and the steamship company, yes, there is an indoors. Yes, it's heated. The steamship company does sell food and beverages on board as well.
Okay. But do you have – now, are there – when I say neighborhoods, so in other words, so people can get an idea, it's not like you're going to go into – ethnic neighborhoods? That doesn't really happen there, does it?
Not particularly. The historically, in the end, the part of the city that the visitor center is located, that was a huge Italian neighborhood. We had an awful lot of Italian immigrants who came into the city. We still see some of the architecture and some of the houses from when we had a lot of Italian immigrants. That's not so evident anymore, and of course, people move around, so it's not like there is a central area for the Italian section versus the Chinese section. No, it's not. It's pretty homogenous.
Okay. Yeah, just so people can get an idea of, you know, so that it's not a neighborhood city.
No.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
No, there are different. There are indeed neighborhoods, but it's not what you're referring to. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything like now that you told me about the island there? What did I miss? Obviously, I didn't. In terms of like say with the music hall, I didn't get to see a show, but I got to get a tour of the music hall.
Right.
But where would I have gone for entertainment? Is the music hall the only place?
Oh gosh, no! Oh my gosh, the music hall is of course our historical and restored theater, and I think I think you even referenced the I can say the word bathrooms. In the music hall,
yes,
which are just so funky and different. I mean, even if you are visiting the music hall for a few minutes, you need to go into the bathrooms just because they're so funky and different. The music hall, of course, is year-round. We also have the Seacoast Repertory Theater. We have the Pontine Theater. We have a number of different theaters. The West End Theater. We have all sorts of theaters in town with an eclectic variety of offerings, whether they're on-stage theater that runs for, you know, it has a 2 or 3 or 4 week run, or the music hall, which has typically one night events, or The Loft, which is also operated by the Music Hall, and that's a new venue. And they do a lot of smaller events. It's a little bit more intimate because there's less than 100, or it's around 100 seats, I guess. And they do a lot of cinema there. So Telluride by the Sea, for instance, is the movies that come from Telluride, those that have won awards and have placed at the big movie event in Telluride, come from Telluride to Portsmouth and are exhibited at both the Music Hall and The Loft. So that's pretty exciting. We had thousands of people. This weekend is the New Hampshire Film Festival. We expect over 10,000 people in town from the New Hampshire
wow.
Film Festival. And those films in the educational series are all over town. They're at some of our historic homes, like the Moffett Ladd House. They're at the Music Hall. They're at the Discover Portsmouth Center. So they try to bring people all over town to enjoy films or educational film seminars all over town. So that's a great deal of fun. We always have music every single night in Portsmouth. The Press Room is one of those places where every single night there's music. That's a lovely little pub and bar that's located in downtown. Rira, which is an Irish pub, frequently has Irish music, which is good fun. And there are a lot of other restaurants and or pubs or bars that have live music on, if not a nightly basis, then at least on the weekends.
So had I been there prior to when I went, like, you know, more into the summer season, I would have been able mm-hmm. to see, you know, like stage kind of stuff, theater.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. I mean, we have from the Algonquin Playhouse up in Algonquin, Maine, down to Portsmouth here and around on the west end of Portsmouth, there's some theater. So we probably have 5 or 6 theater opportunities, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then again, I performed on the stage at the Music Hall.
I heard about that, yes. Are you going to give us another rendition?
What had happened was that because I was commenting that I had been in the theater for a number of years, and then so when the guy said, does anybody want to do anything, and I wasn't really going to do anything because I haven't done anything in a while, and there was this couple there, and they go, oh, come on, you said you performed in the theater. And I'm going, whoa, okay. Well, I guess I'll do a scene from The Wizard of Oz from Munchkinland. And that's what I wound up doing. So
I really wish I was there to video that. That would have looked great on our Facebook page.
And it's funny because, like, you know, people say, you know, to do it on the radio. And years ago, I was on a radio show. I forgot the guy's name. Very famous guy. Had a radio show. And then I was on the show, and I did my scenes from Munchkinland. And after I finished, I went, I can't do radio. Can't see me when I'm doing a scene from Munchkinland. Part of it is seeing the expressions on my face and not just
right.
hearing my voice. So I'm going, well, that's it. Never going to do radio again. Well.
Yeah. How's that working for you, Merle?
Yeah. Hey, listen, in terms of growing up, my worst subject was writing.
Uh-huh. Oh, and here you are writing for all of these publications and your blogs and
and it adds because this weekend I'm covering a particular event, and aside from the ones I already write for, I have an assignment from 2 other publications.
Oh gosh.
To write for as well. Yes. So
oh
like,
my gosh. So what do you do in your spare time?
Sleep. Sleep and eat. It's funny because I turned, I looked at my calendar, I went, oh, let's see, I have tomorrow. I got something Saturday, I got something Sunday, I got something Monday, I got something Tuesday. Oh, my God. And I booked, like, got an event every single day to go to. And I went, okay, now I have to, like, write down over here the word rest. Do not do anything.
Yes.
Stay, you know.
Schedule it in. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
But back to getting to this. Is there anything else that you know that you I could have done, being that summer, or I didn't get to do, or you know missed out on?
Well, summer is certainly our busiest time, from probably the last of April through maybe next week. Is our busiest time of the year. There's so much to do on the seacoast, obviously. You know, if you think of the seacoast, you think of the summertime. But I think what folks might not know is that there's so much also to do in the rest of the over the rest of the year, at least through Christmas and the holidays, and then kicking back up again in February. January is a pretty slow month, but you know, this year, this time of the year, we have scarecrows that have just popped up all over town. They're dressed in all different outfits. They're down in Market Square. They're in front of different businesses. They're in front of the music hall. We have one in front of the chamber. So scarecrows of the port. And they're all one-of-a-kind scarecrows that we look forward to every single year. We have we just had the chili cook-off at Strawberry Bank with Prescott Park, where many of the local restaurants compete for the best chili award, and there's People's Choice and Judge's Choice, and we just had that last weekend. We have a brew fest coming up this Saturday, the Red Hook Ale Brew Fest. Strawberry Bank has Ghosts on the Bank, which is a family-friendly trick-or-treat going through the houses on Strawberry Bank, which is our 10-acre living history museum. And then the Portsmouth Halloween Parade is absolutely hilarious. It's total community, totally, you never know who's going to show up. Everybody goes gangbusters all out for it. The costumes are insanely good. And it's just this big, hilarious night that we have. In November, we have the Restaurant Week Portsmouth on the Seacoast, where we have 10 days of dining at almost 50 restaurants, three-course meals, $16.95 and $29.95 lunch and dinner. And we have typically about 75,000 people who come into town over those 10 days, who come into the restaurants on the Seacoast, the 50 restaurants or so, in what would normally you would think would be a really low time, you know, low season, but this is when we get all the special deals for the dining. So if you think about it, that's $10 per course for a fine dining dinner.
Oh, sure.
And you have an appetizer, entree, and dessert. Where are you going to get $10 a course in a fine dining restaurant? So we keep things going year round. We really do. In December, we have Vintage Christmas. Vintage Christmas is a combination of Strawberry Bank Museum's Candlelight Stroll, where all the little pathways around the 10 acres of houses are all lit by candlelight, little luminaries. They have bonfires. They have Christmas carolers. They have people dressed in the period costume in each of the houses, anywhere from the 1600s to the 1950s. So you can go into a house that's from the 1700s, and they will either be creating or cooking something, a craft, or some sort of a baking something that they would have been doing in that time period. So you go into the 1950s house, and there's a woman with heels and an apron cooking on an avocado stove.
Yeah.
So it's just, and the music hall has, you know, the Messiah Sing and the Nutcracker and all sorts of incredible programming during the weekends of leading up to the holidays, so for the December weekends. So it's just, there's a lot going on at Christmas time. The holiday, the shops all have specials. They have specials nights like ladies night or men's night, a lot of them, most of them have little beverages in each of the shops. So if the husband wants to just sip a little bit while the wife is shopping, that works out really well. There's just so much going on during the week up to the holidays.
How about that one that one temple, are they doing anything for the holidays?
You know, I don't know if they are. I honestly, oh, that's not true. I do know that they are. I have heard about, oh gosh, and I'm not going to know when they are, but I've heard about some concerts because I ran into a friend who was actually going to choir practice. And she told me about some concerts that they're going to be doing at the temple. And that's all I know. I'm not going to help you there, Merle. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know about what's happening this year. Did you hear, by the way, in terms of the calendar?
No, what's happening?
Because of the way the Hebrew calendar is falling out, we are now going to be celebrating Thanksgivica. Hanukkah night,
exactly
the first night of Hanukkah, falls out the night before Thanksgiving.
Uh-oh.
So the first day of Hanukkah falls out on Thanksgiving.
I see that.
I've been coming up with a whole thing on how we're going to do this, you know, including things like you get a menorah and you have to light, and the candles, make sure that they're orange and brown.
Uh-huh.
when you're stuffing your kosher turkey with challah bread.
Okay.
You're carving a pumpkin, a small pumpkin, to make sure you put like a point at the bottom and carve in the four Hebrew letters so that you could use it as your a dreidel.
Now that the kids
also,
would love.
And also as far as giving gifts, the tradition actually for Hanukkah, you're supposed to really give a gift every day, all seven,
yes.
Or you know. But because it's Thanksgiving, at least on the first, to give an elaborate gift to everybody and take it back, because you're an Indian giver.
Oh no. I'm not sure that that's how it works on Thanksgiving.
I'm going to be writing this whole really funny thing on how to celebrate the two holidays at the same time.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to have to give us all instructions.
Oh, I will. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait, somebody wants to say hello. That was Esther.
Is that the chickens?
Chicken, yeah.
Oh,
Esther came in here
hello,
and she
chicken.
Said she wanted to say hello to you because you met her.
I did. I met
yes,
them
you were
at
on
the Blue Mermaid for lunch. Yes. Yes, I saw that. And they have nothing to worry about for Thanksgiving, so that's good.
Nah, they don't know. They don't really care.
No. They don't have to worry about it. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your calling in and sharing all this great info with us. Of course, you know,
I appreciate the opportunity.
People could see all this. Oh, you get it. And the website is?
The website is goportsmithnh.com, and that right now leads to our regular chamber site, but it has a lot of the events in there, but very soon that will point to our new tourism website, which will be totally different and have all of the information anybody needs to know in order to be able to book their visit to Portsmouth. It will also be mobile friendly, so that once you get to Portsmouth, even if you're on the way to somewhere else and you decide, hey, let's just head into Portsmouth for a little while, it'll be mobile friendly so you can even just look on your mobile phone or your smartphone and figure out what's going on today while you're in town.
Okay, fabulous.
GoPortsmithNH.com.
Okay, got it. Thanks so much. And
great to talk with you, Merle.
Yeah, I'm going to call Brennan and tell him a big moneymaker idea.
Good. He'll be happy to hear about it.
If he does it, you'll hear about it.
Oh.
So.
Good. Well, one of you needs to tell me about it when he picks up on it.
Okay.
Excellent. Good. All right, Meryl, great to talk with you. Say hi to Lori for us and the chickens.
Okay. Have a nice evening.
Okay, you too. Thanks. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, not sure, but I don't know what happened maybe with Scott. I know he wasn't going to be at – he was – traveling first, so he might not have gotten there or whatever. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to end the show early, and I'll talk with Scott and have him, you know, call in another time to talk about the Blue Mermaid Grill and its Caribbean-inspired cuisine. So for now, the next time I do a show, then I'll get into this whole thing on once I complete all my ideas on Thanksgiving. So until then, have a great day, evening, or whatever. Let's find my thing here. Here it is. Okay. Bye, everybody.